Okay, I'd like to dedicate tonight's shir, Lezecher Nishmas, the Baal Shevet Alevi, Zecherno Levracha, because the main makor for even considering this topic is actually a tshuva in the Shevet Alevi. The Shevet Alevi, Rav Rosner, passed away, if I understand correctly, right before Pesach, Amir Aviantif, I mentioned earlier. Different news reports had him at either 101 or 102 years old. But he was a great tzaddik and a real genius and a great Talmud Chacham. He had been a student in Chachmei Lublin in Poland under Meir Shapiro. Eventually, before Holocaust in the State of Israel, he was able to make Aliyah and actually was learning in Yerushalayim when the Chazon Ish sent him, told him he should come to Bnei Brak and start a neighborhood called Zichron Meir, which is in memory of Meir Shapiro. He started a yeshiva in Yerushalayim called Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, in Bnei Brak. So he was the Rav of that community in Bnei Brak and of that yeshiva, but he was most well known far beyond the walls of his yeshiva or his neighborhood because of his monumental work of responsa of the Shevet Alevi. So his neshama shav and aliyah should be his chus for everybody, and the learning tonight certainly should be in his memory, as eventually we will get to the crux of the matter, which comes from a tshuva of him. The question I'd like to discuss is what happens if the rabbi has forgotten to count Sfiras Omer for an entire 24-hour period. If the expectation is, as in most shuls, that the rabbi is going to count Sfirat Omer out loud for everyone at the end of Mariv, it could be embarrassing for the rabbi if everyone realizes that he has forgotten. So are there any allowances for the rabbi to count out loud to be on behalf of the whole tzibor to save him from embarrassment, even though, as we'll discuss momentarily, but to some extent you already know, but the general practice is that when a person has forgotten, we don't usually make the bracha. So in order to know whether there is any leniency for the rabbi or not, so we need to start at the beginning and review a little bit of the basics of where does the whole idea of counting from, where does the issue of bracha come from, where does the idea of forgetting come from, and then, hopefully in the last 15-20 minutes, we'll be able to discuss the fascinating question of being motzi someone or counting on behalf of others if you have forgotten. So the issue of when to count and what happens if you forget, it all goes back to Gemaras, both in Maseches Menachos and Maseches Megillah. The Gemara Megillah on Daf Chaf tells us that the correct time to count is at night. We know that there are certain mitzvos that we do which are day mitzvos, literally in the daytime, and the other mitzvos which are specifically done at the nighttime. It's a famous Mishnah and Sugya and Masechta Megillah, and among those listed for mitzvos at night is the mitzvah of counting at night. The only suffix is really whether you can count all night or you have to count specifically in the beginning of the evening. But you certainly are, it's certainly a nighttime mitzvah. That's clear from the Gemara. Why is it a nighttime mitzvah? What's the benefit of the night as opposed to the morning? So this is a discussion in the Rishonim. Most seem to understand that the reason is because the whole purpose of our counting is to pattern after the actual harvesting, the katsira of the Omer. We start counting on the night of the second day of Pesach, because that's when they used to harvest the Omer, and the Omer, which is a barley karban, because the next day they would bring the karban Omer. But the harvesting, the Kohanim would go out with the sickle to cut the barley to prepare for the next morning's karban, so that took place at night. So most Mepharshim understand that the reason we count at night is because we're mimicking the mitzvah of Kitzira. Sfira and Kitzira are patterned one after the other. We count when we would harvest. Others suggest, Rabbeinu Tam actually says, that an idea which we'll have to come back to, the idea of Tumimos. Since we know we want to look at the entire mitzvah as one unit, ideally we want to have it all perfectly. So that doesn't mean only counting every day of the 49 days of the Omer, says Rabbeinu Tam, but it even means counting at the beginning of the day, of the halachic day. So even if you didn't count the moment it got dark, but night as a unit, it counts as the beginning. And if you don't count in the nighttime, says Rabbeinu Tam, that's already a deficiency, a chisaron of tamimos. But the main reason I think generally understood is because we want to pattern ourselves after the harvesting. And in fact, if you look in the tour and the Shulchan Aruch, there is no area of Shulchan Aruch that's dedicated to Hilchos Sfiras Omer, but it's tucked away nicely in the middle of Hilchos Pesach, because chronologically, which is how the Shulchan Aruch is organized, obviously it's associated with the second day of Pesach. So in Siman Tuf, Pei Tes, the tour and the Shulchan Aruch both say that ideally, Lechatchila, you should count at the beginning of the night, generally defined, at least preferably, at after Tzeis HaKochavim as soon as possible. But, says the Shulchan Aruch, nevertheless, you can count any time throughout the night with a bracha. Ideally at the beginning of the night, but any time throughout the night you didn't count, you were busy, you were at a wedding, you know, I wouldn't say at a wedding, but depending on what your availus issues are, but you were out at a shir very late, or the like, you were playing with your grandchildren and you forgot, and it's now 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, so you can count even with a bracha. Ideally the beginning of the evening with a bracha, but really if you can't, you can count throughout the night. Of course, that begs the question in step two of the halacha is, well, what if you forgot it completely at night? Are you out? Are you allowed to count during the morning? Right. So that's not in that initial stage of the discussion, that wasn't even addressed. The only question was, how early in the night should you count? And if you didn't count as soon as possible, can you still count with the bracha? And the answer is yes. On that question, we're lenient. Any time when it's dark, any time when it's night out, you can still count with a bracha. What? Yeah, of course.
Bein hashmasha, before it's night, are you allowed to count with kavana?
It's an excellent question. The general assumption, which we're trying to avoid in this minyan, but the general assumption in this is, no, it's okay. It's beferish in the Mishnah Berurah. Again, this would be a topic of an entire other shir, but in one sentence or less, we generally assume that nowadays the mitzvah of Siyarat Omer is only Midah Rabbanan, because there's no karban. And therefore, since it's only Midah Rabbanan, the Mishnah Berurah says, if necessary, you are allowed to count during Banish Mashas, before it gets dark after sunset. But it's clearly preferred, which is why we try to arrange in this minyan, if you can, to count after it gets dark. So the next step in the halacha is what happens if you didn't count at all at night? So you can count at any time with a bracha at night. What if you didn't count at night? And you wake up the next morning and you got that email, or a friend of my in-laws in Staten Island, Milton Pfeiffer, so he one year got for all of his friends pillowcases. Right? So you have it on your pillow. So let's say all those gimmicks didn't work, and nevertheless, you woke up in the morning and either you remembered, or you got an email from the OU, or whatever organization sending out emails now, or SMSs, or you went to shul and somebody announced it. You've all forgot to count last night. So what's the halacha? So here the Shulchan Aruch discusses this, and the Shulchan Aruch implies that you should count without a bracha. This is in Taf Pei Tes Siv Zayin. You should count, but without a bracha. Why not? So the Mishnah Berurah explains that as we have a rule generally in Hilchos Brachos, Safek Brachos Lahakel. It's not clear, says the Shulchan Aruch, without getting into all the details, if you really are allowed to count during the day. We said ideally you're supposed to count at night. That's when the harvesting was. So if you take that, you know, very seriously, especially if you take Rabbeinu Thomas Tamimo's idea, so maybe you don't have it anymore during the day. It's not clear you can count. So that is a huge leniency, which we take for granted. But in the Shulchan Aruch, it wasn't obvious. So Shulchan Aruch says, yes, we allow you to count and maintain that count then with a bracha the subsequent night. But since we're not 100% sure, count during the day, but without a bracha, just to hedge, just in case there would be a problem. So that's step two. So ideally count at night with a bracha. You can count any time during the night with a bracha. If you forgot and count the next morning, okay, we allow that. It's not great, but we allow it, but without a bracha. Of course, the third stage, which is the one that really will set the tone for the rest of Shir and our unique topic tonight, is what happens if you forgot not only at night, but in the subsequent day, an entire 24-hour period, and the only reason you remembered you didn't count is because the next night, when they get up to count Sfira, you remember, oh my gosh, my count is off because I completely missed the day. I didn't count the night before. Yes, sir.
All right, before we get to that step, you forgot. The next day you say you count. What happens the next day?
I think I mentioned it, but if I wasn't clear, I'll repeat it. If you count during the day, you count without a bracha, right. But that allows you to bridge your counting, and then you can continue counting with a bracha.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't hear
it's okay. That. It's not a problem. I'm glad I can clarify. Thank okay? You. No problem. So what happens if you forget a full 24-hour period? So here, we have a machlokas rishonim. But for those of you who are somewhat familiar with this topic, you have to listen very carefully because it could be tricky, because you may be surprised by the position of the players. In this question of, if I forgot to count, so initially when we talked about can you count during the day, it's actually an opinion quoted in Tosos known as the Bahag, who's lenient. The Bahag is the one who says you're allowed to count during the day. He even implies you can count with a bracha during the day. So we don't accept his opinion, but he's very lenient, the Bahag, on the opinion that you can count during the day. So you've missed, 8 hours, you're 9 hours, you're 10 hours late, you're 15 hours late. So then you can count. But, says the Bahag, he who giveth and taketh with the other hand, he's makel initially. Well, he says, but once you miss even that, then he thinks you can't count anymore at all with a bracha. You're out. Really, you're out. However, Tosos and other Rishonim say, Rabbi Yosef Kotz, Rabbi Haigo, and even others, who's a, more of a, closer to contemporary of the Bahag, they say, come on, it's not ideal. Maybe you missed the mitzvah. You missed the mitzvah that day. Well, what's that got to do with making you out completely? You can never count again the rest of the 49-day period. That's too far. That's too extreme, too machmir, too strict. And they say, in fact, you could definitely count. Maybe not with a bracha, but certainly, maybe even with a bracha. It's a really strong chumrah, this opinion of the Bahag, which seems to be relatively a minority view, perhaps even a sole view on his part. So he, even though he's lenient to allow you to count during the day, he's very strict. If you miss that, and you've now been gone 24 hours, he thinks you really are out. And yet, as I say, most opinions really feel like, that's not so terrible. It's not so terrible. If you don't count to that day, so you'll continue counting. But there is this opinion. And this opinion became famous and well-known because, somewhat surprisingly, the Shulchan Aruch decided to be machmir for this opinion, despite the fact that it really is the minority view. But nevertheless, says the Shulchan Aruch in Sif Chet, if you forget to count for an entire day, you should continue to count in deference to the majority of you who thinks you're still in. The Bahag thinks you're out. There's no point in counting anymore. It's like playing charades. It's not the real thing anymore, according to the Bahag. If we were truly purists of the Bahag's position, we wouldn't count at all anymore. Right? When the egg cracks, it cracks. Right? There's nothing to do about it. Nevertheless, out of deference to the Bahag, don't use a bracha anymore. Out of deference to the majority view, keep on counting. Right? So the whole thing is, well, we actually do, when I say we do, I mean, hopefully we count every night with a bracha. But the common practice, which we're all familiar with, that if you miss a 24-hour period, you can count, but you can't count with a bracha anymore, as far as I know, it's no one's opinion, at least not in the Rishonim. It's what emerged out of the chulent of the, trying to respect and appeal to the out of deference to the various opinions. So it's kind of a compromise all the way around. If you took a purist of the majority view, you could keep on counting with a bracha. If you took a purist of the Bahag, you wouldn't count at all anymore. The compromise in the middle, which the Shulchan Aruch advocates, I'll take your question in 1 second, the compromise in the middle is that you keep on counting, but without a bracha. Now this, I'll take your question in a moment, but now, if hopefully we're clear, and if not, now is the time for questions on this part, because this now sets the stage for our question. Of what if the person in question who forgot an entire 24-hour period is the rabbi? And he might have forgotten it, but at least this halacha he knows. So he didn't count, but he knows that now that he didn't count, he's not supposed to use a bracha anymore. So it's bad enough that he didn't do it, but now the whole shul is going to know, the whole community, the whole yeshiva is going to know that he forgot a day, because if he can't count with a bracha anymore, and they're all expecting him every night to count with a bracha. That kind of, the first 10, 20 minutes, 15 minutes of our shiur now has just been to set the stage. Now you understand where it's coming from. Yes, sir.
Is there something in the pasuk itself that would give itself over to, if you don't count to the 24-hour period, you're done?
I don't think
how
so.
How would they derive that?
So the best I would say, and I don't want to spend too much time on this point because I have an entire shiur on it. In fact, I think it was a year or two ago on Pesach we gave an entire shiur on this. How do you understand this machlokas? What's it all about? Which is, I'm reframing your question. Why shouldn't you be able to keep on counting? I'll frame the question in a different way. If, God forbid, a person didn't put on tefillin one day, would it dawn on anyone that he shouldn't put on tefillin the next day, or maybe he should put on tefillin but not a bracha? We wouldn't twist ourselves in a pretzel, right? That's in essence what you're asking?
Right.
So the simple understanding, significant asterisk, not because there are definitely other more ways to understand this, but Soloveitchik had a completely different way of understanding the machlokas than I'm about to tell you now. But the simple way of understanding it, which you'll find in the Mishneh Berurah, really based on the opinion of the Prima Gadim, is that the machlokas is very simply, how do you understand this 49-day mitzvah? Is it one big mitzvah with 49 pieces? So if you pull out one piece of the puzzle, the whole thing comes tumbling down? Or do you view it as 49 separate mitzvahs? The Bahag is generally understood, I say generally understood, to believe that it's really one big mitzvah, and if you miss it, so then you simply can't make it up. It's just gone. It's like, to use my tefillin analogy, it's as if you're missing half the parshios. Right? We don't say, well, you know, you didn't have all four parshios in the box, but at least you have three, better than nothing. The answer is no. If you don't have the tefillin made the way it's supposed to be made, it is nothing. Or as when I was a kid, it was before the, at least in America, you know, when I was a kid, I remember there was almost no kosher gum. Now you can get almost anything in every possible flavor and color kosher, right? So it was very hard, especially as a kid growing up in Cincinnati, Ohio. We didn't have poshkes, we didn't have that kind of stuff. But I remember at some point, one of the rebbeim, because we wanted to chew all these other exciting bubble gums, I said, well, you know, how much bad could there be in it? And I remember him saying to me at the time, 99% kosher is 100% treif. Right? It's either kosher or it's not. So the Baha'i understands either you counted the 49 days or you didn't. It's one big mitzvah. That's the general understanding. So we are in the Shulchan Aruch are not 100% convinced he's right. So we tell you to keep on counting. But because he might be right, Safek Brachos Lo Hakel, don't make the bracha. Yes, sir.
What about the
There's such an opinion. Yes, that's not it's not the mainstream view, but it's not the mainstream view. But according to that view, you probably would make a bracha. Yes.
Why is this was so different, say, than Lulav and Esrog? You miss one day, you can use bracha.
It's exactly that. That's the same.
Why Hanukkah? You miss one night.
Yeah, excellent question. The two examples you gave are excellent. They're similar to Tefillin. We generally assume that even though there's 8 days of Hanukkah, take your example, there are 8 different mitzvos. So whatever you missed, but whatever you do, you do. Apparently, the Baha'i understand it's one big mitzvah. So it's simply not the same. It's similar to, if you're missing a significant part of your esrog, right, we wouldn't say, well, at least I have most of it. Right? You're missing it. It's chaser.
I could be completely wrong, but I would assume, because this is the only mitzvah with that word tamimos.
No, so there is the word tamimos, which I guess if you were again, there is the word. But again, it's not clear that's what tamimos means.
I know, but that's what gives it a problem.
Yeah, where did the Baha'i get it from? You can say, where did the Baha'i get this idea from? The answer may be from tamimos. Yes, last question so we can move on. Yes.
Does that have to do with the machlokas of why we don't say shepherd?
What are you getting at? I wouldn't think so, but maybe you have an idea I haven't thought of.
Because since it should be missing days, so the shepherd wouldn't be any good.
Is that a reason that's given for why we don't make shepherd? I've never heard of that. I'm not familiar with that. I know of at least 2 other reasons why we don't say Shehecheyanu. There's the famous Balamor, then the Psachim, why we don't say Shehecheyanu. There's other reasons given. I never heard that reason. If you held like the Prima Gadim and the Bahag, then that would make sense, I guess. But I don't know that that's necessarily. I wouldn't think, just giving my own opinion, I wouldn't have thought that those two things were connected. But maybe. Anyway, okay, let's move on. So let's say we have a person who everyone's expecting to count for the whole tzibor, but now, unfortunately, for whatever reason, he has forgotten. So is he allowed to count or not? So far, I framed this as a rabbi. That for
his
obvious
contract is up for renewal.
That's not part of the discussion. at least it shouldn't be. But the truth of the matter is, you could have a situation where you have a chazan kavua. Now, most shuls nowadays, that's not so practical in the sense of an official position of a chazan kavua. But you could have, what if it's a
Ovel?
In fact, many tshuvas discuss the issue of the rabbi or the chazan kavua, which we're going to get to, but just so you should know, I saw there's two tshuvas written by one of my heroes who passed away not too many years ago, Rav Moshe Halberstam, who was the dying of the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim, and a great, great person, and a great Talmud Chacham. So in his tshuva sefer, Dvar Moshe, he has back-to-back tshuvas where he discusses, what if a person became, Rachman al-Islam, became an Ovel during the Sfira? So there's no reason you can't count when you're an Ovel. But let's say he was an Onain. We don't make brachos, we don't do mitzvahs when you're an Onain, the period in between the death and the burial. So let's say, for halachic reasons, he was an Onain. He couldn't count. So now, if he wants to be the chazan to honor the memory of his mother, of his father. On the other hand, he'll be embarrassed if each time, he's the chazan every night, someone else has to count. So that's an analogous case. It's not identical, but an analogous or parallel case, at least, to the question of the rabbi. So in the halachic literature of the last 100 plus years, many of them, I don't know what the historicity of this is, but nevertheless, it is quoted by many well-known sources that this was in fact a story that occurred to the Beis Halevi, first Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitcher, the great-grandfather and namesake of the Rav, and the Mikrai Kodesh, and the Ma'adim Azmanim, and many others from, quote, that Maisa Shehoya Kachoya with the Beis Halevi, who is the Rav in Brisk. And the Beis Halevi apparently paskin for himself. He forgot. He missed a day for whatever the reason. That's been lost to history. But the Beis Halevi forgot. So what did... No, I wasn't. He forgot. Oh. Something happened. He forgot. But he was embarrassed. He wanted to be able to be motzi the tzibor, but he was embarrassed. He couldn't. So the Beis Levi came up with a brisker einfalt. He came up with a solution, or as my kids would say, a patent. What did he do? He went over to one of the people in the shul, who he felt he could trust, his confidant. He told them the truth and says, "You're still in, right? I want you deliberately not to make a bracha, not before the rabbi, not after the rabbi. You don't make a bracha." and I'll make the bracha, but I'll have in mind that I'm specifically making it to be motzi you. Usually the rabbi is making his own bracha, he's just making it out loud. Here, I'm going to make the bracha to be motzi you. Yes, that was his arrangement. In any of the stories, it doesn't say what night of sphira this was. I assume it was the first night, but afterwards, who knows? It's all your guess is as good as mine. That is the famous solution of the Beis Halevi that is quoted. Now, it was this possibility, can we be motzi someone if we're already out? That was discussed long before the Beis Halevi, which we'll get to in a moment. But as a story, apparently, specifically in the context of a rabbi, as solution possibility number one, so this is, I'm saying, I think in reputable sources, this is quoted as actually the solution of the Beis Halevi. The question is it effective? Can you do that or not? So this is a major machlokas. It seems that, whether it's the rabbi or anybody else for that matter, there's a big machlokas in the commentaries of the Shulchan Aruch and in the subsequent tshuva literature. Perhaps the most well-known of those who were against this practice, rabbi or not, doesn't matter who, was the Pri Chodesh. The Pri Chodesh is one of the classical commentaries written on the Shulchan Aruch. You'll find it in the back. If you have really good vision or really strong glasses, you can even read it. Very small print. But very, very important work, the Chodesh. And he is very against this. He says, once you forget, then you're no longer, in a halachic terminology, a bar chayuva. You're no longer, you're not shayach, you're not connected. You can only be motzi someone if you're in the game. Right? If you're, I can't, if I'm watching my favorite team play and I'm screaming, I could do it better than him. Right? So aside from the fact that you're deluded, but even if you could, you're not on the team, you can't go in. But if the sub, if the guy on the bench who's wearing the jersey can do it better, maybe the coach will put him in. But if you're not even on the team, you're out. You can't get in. Says the Pri Chodesh, once you miss a day, you are totally out. You can't do it. It's interesting, there is a sefer, some of you maybe have heard of, called the Knesset HaGadola. The author of that sefer, which is also a collection of the literature and Shulchan Aruch commentaries, was somebody, Reb Chaim Ben Avisti. Reb Chaim Ben Avisti was a 17th century Sephardi Gadol. He actually lived in Turkey. Great big Gadol, the Knesset HaGadola. So some people, I would say, maybe five or less in this room have at least heard of that sefer. But my guess is maybe nobody, or one or two people at most, in any group have heard of the Tshuva sefer that he wrote. The Knesset HaGadola has a Tshuva sefer called Boi Chai. In his Tshuva Sefer, he writes that he was asked the Shaila by the rabbis of Salonika, which was another big contemporary town of his in the 17th century, in the Turkish Empire then. And the rabbis of Salonika were Mekil. Again, they lived before the Beis Halevi, they didn't know the Beis Halevi, but they thought you could do such a thing, that someone who's out could just have in mind to be motzi somebody else and make the bracha for him. But they sent the Shaila to the Gadol Ador, who was in their Sephardic communities, the Knesset HaGadola, and he thinks it was ridiculous. He basically says the same thing to the Pri Chodesh. He says, how can you do that? You're out. Once you're out, you can't be motzi somebody else. And this is discussed by a number of others. I found a very interesting sefer that was quoted called the Tshuvas HaRadad. That's Rav David Meisels. He lived in the end of the 19th century, somewhere in Russia. I'm not exactly sure anything else about him. But he also discusses this, and he thinks that this should also be a problem. These poskim who are very against it, they don't just use sports analogies. They actually have a Gemara, which they think will prove their case. Although it's a Yerushalmi. It's not in our Gemara, it's in the Yerushalmi, which speaks about Purim. We know, especially those of us living in Eretz Yisrael, are sensitive to the fact that in Yerushalayim they will read on the 15th of Adar, and the rest of the world pretty much was reading on the 14th of Adar, what's known as a Ben Krach and a Ben Ir. So the Yerushalmi says, could somebody, let's take an example, somebody in Beit Shemesh, who's already read on the 14th, could he go to Yerushalayim and read for someone on the 15th? Or what about the opposite? Could a Yerushalmite, who's a great reader, come off to Beit Shemesh or to Gush Etzion or wherever, and he's not his day yet, he's not till tomorrow, but be motzi someone on the 14th? Interesting question. Yerushalmi says no. You can't do it. You can't do it. No, not really an explanation, just the fact. So that's what the Pri Chodesh, and everyone who followed the Pri Chodesh said, they think that's analogous. You're not, we know, we're all familiar with the fact that, in many communities, one person reads the Megillah many times. He goes multiple minyanim, he goes to the hospital, he reads for his wife, he reads for the kid. That you could do, afal pi sheyatza motzi, because it's the same day. He's obligated on the 14th, it's the 14th. That you could do. But to go from the 14th to the 15th and vice versa, so on that day, you're not on the team. Right? Like in certain sports, they can deactivate you. You know, you're on the team one day, you're not off the team the next day. It's like, hey, that's how it goes. You're not on the team now. You know, on the day that you're on the team, you could help, but if not, you're not. So the Prichoder says that's analogous. Now, what are we going to do with the poor Beis Halevi? There's all these poskim, particularly Sephardi poskim, but not only Sephardi poskim, we seem to be against him. So the truth is that both before and after this Beis Halevi, there's many others who disagree. The Prima Gadim, the Maimer Mordechai, two also very equally prominent commentaries to the Shulchan Aruch, they disagree with the Pri Chodesh, and they don't think that this is necessarily an equivalent example. Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, both in his Tshuva Sefer, the Har Tzvi, as well as his book on a holiday Torah called Mikrei Kodesh, he was the great Rav of Yerushalayim. So Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, also, he takes this opinion of others, and he thinks it's not analogous. He thinks, if you talk about someone who, let's say, on the 14th or the 15th, the Megillah case, he says, so, if I live in Yerushalayim, the 14th is nothing for me. It never will be. I mean, assuming, you know, in the status quo, I'm a Yerushalmite, I'm a Ben Yerushalayim. So the 14th is nothing for me. He says, but this person who, whether it's the rabbi or the chazan or the ovel, whoever, Sfira is not nothing for him. This time, he's relevant to it. He's just out because of a chumrah towards the Bahag. You can compare someone, the Shulchan Aruch has this chumrah, we should be choshish for the Bahag. You're going to compare that to Yerushalmite on the 14th of Adar, where he's mamish, it's nothing for him. It's like any other day. He's like, that's really, he thinks that that's too extreme. Or in the other direction, you know, somebody, you know, for whom Yerushalayim, the 15th is nothing. The 15th is nothing, Kimat, if you don't live in Yerushalayim. So they feel that that analogy is not really good. The Harei Kodesh, which are the notes, if anyone's familiar with the Sefer Mikrei Kodesh, a beautiful set of Sfarim on the holidays, Tzvi Pesach Frank himself was not only a genius and a gadol, but he had the rare combination of being all that and a great writer. So his Sfarim are a pleasure to read. Very often, I don't want to name any names, but very often the biggest geniuses are often, you know, find hard to communicate with the rest of us. So the Tzvi Pesach Frank had no such problem. Al Derech Moshel, they say that as a koach, I won't use the contrast, it won't be appropriate, but that was one of the great things about Rav Soloveitchik. Soloveitchik wasn't only the biggest genius, but he also knew how to explain things even for people who weren't geniuses. Rav Schechter always likes to tell the story of Talmidim of a certain other very famous yeshiva who had heard about the legendary Rav Soloveitchik, and then they came to hear one of the famous Yortzeit drushas or Tshuva drushas, and they left, oh my gosh, yeah, we can understand everything. And Rav Schechter, I don't know if he said it to them, but when he tells the story, he always tells us Talmidim, he goes, they were ridiculous. He goes, they didn't understand. Don't say, that was the godless of the Rav. He could say something so unbelievable, and you could understand it. They had been conditioned by who the Rosh Yeshiva was to think that the more you didn't understand, the more brilliant it was. But the godless of the Rav Soloveitchik was he could make it understandable. So Tzvi Pesach Frank was in that vein. He really is a beautiful writer. So he has a grandson-in-law. His son's son-in-law, Tanchum Kom, I think his son was Tanchum. His son's son-in-law, Tanchum Frank, his son's son-in-law was named Rav Yosef Kohn, who was one of the big Dayanim in Yerushalayim. Anyone who really interested in Jewish geography, so probably the most prominent Rosh Hashiva currently of Chevron Yeshiva and Givat Mordechai in Yerushalayim is someone Rav David Kohn. He's the son of Rav Yosef Kohn. He is the great grandson-in-law of Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. After the terrible attack at Pigua in Harnof, so a month later on the Shloshim, so many, some of you may have seen this because I know the video was online, I actually had the privilege of being there in person to hear the hespedim that were given at the Shloshim for Rav Moshe Tversky, Hashem Yom Kom Damo. So I thought, I'm proud to be biased, but I think even as an objective observer, by far the best speech in content and in form was by his brother, Rav Meir Tversky. But there were also a lot of other good speeches, and one of the really interesting ones was by this Chevron Rosh Yeshiva, Rav David Kohn. So his father, Rav Yosef Kohn, who was the grandson-in-law of Tzvi Pesach Frank, and he wrote notes. He wrote Ha'aris on the Mikrei Kodesh. If you look at the Mikrei Kodesh on the bottom, there's something called Harei Kodesh. So that's by this grandson-in-law. So he points out, if you think about it, when we say someone's not obligated, they're not a bar chayuva, you have to be in the parsha, on the team, to be motzi. So what exactly do we mean by that? And he says, if you think about it, you could probably differentiate this, and I think it'll help us concretize and conceptualize this. He says, we could really distinguish between three types of people. He says, number one is, there are certain people who are, they're not obligated in anything. The typical example would be, let's say, somebody who's a non-Jew, a nice, wonderful person, my neighbor, but he can't be motzi me in something. He's not obligated, not only not in this mitzvah, he's not obligated in any mitzvah. He is completely mufka. Then we have other people, he says. A second category, however, would be a situation in which you have somebody who is not, he's obligated in lots of mitzvahs, just maybe not in this mitzvah. Right, so that might be an example exactly what would be of a woman. So a woman generally are allowed to volunteer For mitzvahs are not obligated in. A woman blows shofar, a woman can shake lulav. But generally speaking, we would assume that a woman can't blow the shofar for a man, even though she's getting a mitzvah when she blows. But she's not a bar chayuva vis-a-vis the man, because she's not obligated in this mitzvah, even though she's obligated in lots of other mitzvahs. And then, says Rav Yosef Cohen, Rav Pesach Frank's grandson, there's a third category, which is really our situation, which is someone who is obligated in general mitzvahs, even obligated in this specific mitzvah, just not obligated in it at this time. So if you accept that formulation, he thinks, so then there really is no difference that between the Purim case, which there, you know...
Yeah,
but so it really, it's questionable. You could go back and forth. The bottom line is the poskim do discuss this possibility, and however you see as more or less compelling this example in Megillah, that becomes an issue. As I mentioned, there is, I'm going to run out of time, so let me finish, thank you. So there is a big machlokus about this, again, the solution of whispering to a confidant, and you know, whether it's the rabbi or the chazan, you know, you don't count with a bracha, let me do it with a bracha, just so no one else will realize, but I could be motzi you. This is quoted by others, Rav Moshe Halberstam, mentioned from the Echres, he paskin in the case of the Onain, who became the Ovel, who became the chazan, he ended up allowing this. There's a shufa sefer called Lev Avram, Rav Avram Weinfeld. There used to be a yeshiva about 10, 15 years ago, I think eventually it closed, but there was a yeshiva for post-high school Americans, which was known colloquially as Lev Abe. So it's really, it was Yeshiva's Lev Avram, and the Rosh Yeshiva was the son of the Lev Avram. It was a great European Talmud Chacham who eventually made Aliyah to Muncie, and he was there. It's a shaila, by the way, about moving from Muncie to Eretz Yisrael. It's a real shaila for certain people. Anyway, so he also is Mekil the Lev Avram. He holds that you could count, he defends the Beis Alevi. And others don't. I'll just mention one quick thing before we get to the Shevet Alevi. We'll conclude with our last 7 minutes. Is that the some of the poskim, particularly the Hasidish poskim, quote two things which are interesting. One is that there was a great Hasidish Rav named Rav Pinchas Karitzer. We'll get back to him in a few moments. He was like from the first generation of Hasidim, like a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, like really, really early. So he also, Mi'ikra Din, he felt apparently that you could count. So for the Hasidish Rabbanim, this is a big deal. But secondly, what's really interesting is that Rav Moshe Halberstam quotes one of his predecessors. I don't exactly know when he was the head of the Eid HaRedis, but certainly around the middle of the 20th century was Rav Moshe Aryeh Freund. That's the name. I think that was the one pre the Satmar Rebbe. He was the head of the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim. And he used to say, and it's quoted in his name, that he has a Mesorah from the Divrei Chaim. Who's the Divrei Chaim? Divrei Chaim was the Sanzer Rav, who was not only with the great Tzaddik and Abamov, but he was considered with Gedolim in Europe pre-war. So the Divrei Chaim, there's a Mesorah that we don't hold like the Bahag. We don't hold like, meaning we don't hold like the Shulchan Aruch. If you miss, you could be a rabbi, you could be not a rabbi, a rabbet, it doesn't matter. You could count with a bracha. It doesn't matter. The 49 different mitzvahs, you missed one, it's not good. So, some poskim, including Rav Moshe Halberstam, hold, even if we don't want to go that far, we're not so brazen just to say it like that, sniff lahakel. You know, when we're trying to build our case, our legal brief, throw that in as another thing to rely on. It's interesting, Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva on this topic, and even though he's a Hasidish Rav Asher Weiss, but he's very glatt in his learning, and he is like beside himself. How could it be, says Rav Asher Weiss, to say like this? And he quotes all these Mar Mekomos. Forget the Bahag, you don't like the Bahag. It's in the Shulchan Aruch. He quotes various poskim even from hundreds of years ago already. Chalila, chalila, to just disregard a din that's a halacha psukah in the Shulchan Aruch. You know, again, so if you're a Sanzer Chassid in Netanya, so okay, that's Divrei Chaim, that's their Mesorah, that's the Rebbe. But to somehow paskin that way in general, Rav Asher Weiss doesn't want to go that far, but Rav Moshe Halberstam was willing to throw that in as a sniffle hakel. So that's just an interesting footnote. Anyway, let's spend the last few minutes in discussing the question of, are there any other solutions? So one solution, which is not necessarily unique to the rabbi, but it could be possible for the rabbi, is simply, you know, be creative, confide in someone you feel you can trust, and just ask them, is it okay? Not everyone agrees with that. A lot of poskim are against it. But many poskim, it would seem to me that it's probably the majority of you, if I had to guess, majority of you seem to say that that should be allowed. The kavod of the Pri Chodesh and the Knesset Zagdola and others notwithstanding, that does seem to be allowed. You could just remember that as the Beis Halevi idea. But here comes Rav Ozner. We mentioned the Shira tonight is in memory of Rav Ozner, just passed away. So he has a tshuva, and his tshuva Shevet Alevi, Chela Gimel Simen Sadi Vav, where he was asked also the question by a Rav, doesn't say who, but the certain Rav acknowledged to him that he forgot, and he's very embarrassed that the shul should know about it. Now, he doesn't add, per se, why this person necessarily couldn't avail himself of the solution. So a few possibilities present themselves. Either because there was no one he could confide in. And unfortunately, there are shuls like that, where the rabbi wouldn't feel comfortable revealing this to anybody. He'd be too vulnerable. Baruch Hashem, I didn't have such a shul, but I had friends, frankly, even some well-known shuls, and there's just kind of a scary relationship between the Baal Batim and the rabbi. It's unfortunate. So maybe that's the possibility. He just didn't want to tell anybody. Even the other possibility is maybe he just didn't believe it worked. Again, not everyone holds that it works. You could be that really ikra din, you could be motzi somebody if you're already apt. You know, my sports team analogy. But whatever the reason, Wozner does not consider that as the practical solution. And therefore, he suggests the following. Perhaps, he says, even without being motzi anyone in particular, we could just allow the rabbi to count, as if nothing has changed. And this is unique for a rabbi. He says, why? Not only because there's an expectation that he'll be able to count, not only that he'll be able to count, that, you know, he's the rabbi, he always does the right thing. But, he says, there's an extra degree, as he says, of kavod habrios. He'll be embarrassed if he has to acknowledge in front of everyone that he forgot. And he adds, connected but slightly different, it's kavod haTorah. Maybe they'll lose respect for him, maybe they won't treat a shirim as well, they won't listen to his psukim. Again, every situation is different, but to me it's not that far of a field to think of certain shuls where this could really be true, for better or for worse. So given that case, Rav Wozner, he goes back and forth, he doesn't love the idea, but in the end he's willing, with his very broad shoulders, to say he thinks if you have no other solution, it is mutter for the rabbi to count just to avoid embarrassment and somehow, which might be in the eyes of some, a chisaron in the kavod haTorah. He has a proof for this, he thinks, as an analogy. In the Mishnah Berurah, they discuss the halacha generally is you're not supposed to daven if you really have to go use the restroom, use the facilities. So the Gemara talks, the Shacharar talks about what if you're a chazan, you just finished your quiet Shemon Esrei, you're about to start chazar hashatz, and you really have to go to the bathroom. So in many cases, the Bir Halacha quotes, since it would be embarrassing for you to have to go out, everyone's waiting, where's the guy? Oh, he's in the bathroom. He's still in the bathroom. He's still in the bathroom. Right? You know, it's embarrassing enough when you first get married. You don't have to do this in shul. You know, that this, you know, that everyone should be worrying about it. You know, they're going to come into the bathroom. Did he clean up? I mean, it's just... So Bir Halacha says, in that case, he can say Chazar Sashatz, even, you know, assuming he can hold it in, not to be too juvenile about it. So that's what the Bir Halacha says. It says of Shevet Alevi. You see, for Kavod HaBrios, to allow someone to avoid embarrassment, sometimes we stretch the halacha a little bit. He allows it. Quite a few other contemporary poskim, with all due respect to Rav Wozner, are as convinced. Perhaps the one that I saw who's most bothered by this psak was Rav Asher Weiss. And Rav Asher Weiss, his Beis Din in Yerushalayim, has a journal called Kovetz Darchei Torah. So this is in Chelek Hei. So Rav Asher Weiss, I think that's the Beis Din out of Ramot. So he writes with great respect to Rav Wozner, but he thinks it's a really big mistake. First of all, he thinks it's really just against the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't distinguish between rabbi and layman. The Shulchan Aruch says, if you missed a day, you know, we paskin that you can't count. So he is very bothered by this, number one. Number two is he says something very fascinating. And again, a lot of it is psychological, and a lot of it is sociological. He says, why is this so embarrassing? They don't know the rabbi's human. Maybe it was unforeseen circumstances. Maybe he was spent the whole night in the hospital tending to the needy. I mean, it could be a lot of good reasons. He's innocent. He's a human being. And maybe he just forgot. Make him a bad person. He says he doesn't understand. Why should that be so embarrassing? He says, on the contrary, he says, maybe even the humility of it is a good thing. And he quotes the same Rav Pinchas Koritzer. I mentioned the Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, whom Ikra didn't thought you could be motzi people, but Rav Pinchas Koritzer said about himself that he didn't do it. He wanted everyone should know that he had forgotten. He was sameach betuva hagadola. He thought it was such a great thing. Shezocha l'shiflus kazu shehigiyalo. Right? So he says, first of all, he said it's so embarrassing. Second of all, and if it's a little embarrassing, a little humility will do a rabbi good also. Right? That's also an important thing. You know, we shouldn't run away from that. And he was so excited, says he didn't forget on purpose. But once he forgot, you know, he looked at it as an opportunity to teach everyone about humility, about responsibility, about being normal, about being real. And he didn't think you have to cover up everything. We don't have to be so fake about everything. If you forgot, so let people know. That, you know, hopefully they'll respect you for your honesty. Again, a lot of that depends on the shul and the relationship that you have prior to with the rabbi. I'll just conclude by mentioning the following. So there's a new set of two things. There's a set of svarim that have come out by someone named Daniel Kleinman. I don't know Daniel personally, but I know his father, Beheshi Kleinman. He wrote the very popular set of art scroll books called Praying with Fire. the privilege of hosting in my house once in Baltimore, a very, very fine person. And I remember him telling me that he has a son who's a super-duper young Talmud Chacham, who's a Talmud Mufak of Rosh Kamenetsky. And he is. And he has published in the last few years, he moved from Philadelphia to Lakewood, but he's published like 6 or 7 volumes of stunning, beautiful Svarim, all with Torah on the holidays and Shabbos, of general halachos, and specifically Pesachim from his Rebbe, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. So in that set of Svarim as well, they quote from Rav Shmuel that he agrees with the in court of Asher Weiss, but he also agrees with Asher Weiss. He thinks that this is too far. He says if you're a rabbi, either just be honest, and okay, you'll have a little humility, it's not a bad thing. Or if you're embarrassed, so then find one person in the shul who you can confide in, who you can trust and tell them the truth. You know, and if it's not the president, then it should be the gabbai. If it's not the gabbai, it should be at least the past president. There should be somebody. Somebody. Please. And if there's nobody, get another job. Find another shul. You know, that's not a good situation. If there's really no one you can confide in, I'll go in all seriousness, there are some shuls like that. Anyways, he says, Shul Kamenetsky, the also like Rav Asher Weiss. He thinks it's not the worst thing, and even if it is, so then use another solution. Or, you know, absent yourself that night in davening, speaking about a chazan, you know, a rabbi can't absent himself for 40 straight days or something, but try to come up with another solution. So they are. I want to just conclude with the following, just to show you, just to highlight the point of sociology of how Ein Ladain Elamash Ein Avrosa. In every case, again, I hope this is enlightening in general, but in the end, you have to ask a shaila and you have to know the specific case. So Rav Asher Weiss in this journal comes out, you know, with respect, but very much against Rav Wozner. But in recent years, there have been 2 websites that have been launched, which are officially with the imprimatur of Rav Asher Weiss, disseminating his Torah. One is by someone who lives not that far from me in Beit Shemesh, who came up with a new Torah Blast, I think it's called, something like that in English. That's a website which is amazing. But even before that, from the Beis Din in Ramot, I think it's in Yerushalayim, there's a website called tevuna.org, all in Hebrew, Tshuvas and Pesachim from Rav Asher Weiss. So there he says almost the same thing he says in the printed journal, but he must have been talking to a different rabbi, because he ends the tshuva, he says, even though in general I think you can't really rely on this, he says, but benidon didon, shemedubar bebekihila, sherabi mechevreha, eina medaktikim bemitzvos, you're in a shul where they're not so strict or so observant in general. Says again, if you're in a situation where without the rabbi doing the counting out loud, maybe people won't count, or maybe he means they'll generally lose respect for the rabbi, and maybe their whole connection to Yiddishkeit and Torah mitzvos is through the rabbi. So really, vicariously, it really could create a lessening in mitzvos. Again, how likely that is, how common that is, perhaps not, but at least hypothetically, and apparently he's dealing with a case that he really felt there was, and the rabbi says, it's not just about my embarrassment, I really think it will hurt the community if this comes out. So then he says, Vare yesh makom lismach l'hakel. So even though he really doesn't like this kula of Rav Wozner, but he's willing to rely on it, if the case is. So either the rabbi has to know his kehila, or if the rabbi feels he's too close to it, so the rabbi has to have a rabbi that he can consult with to see. So, okay, and the moral of the story is, of course, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You shouldn't forget, the rabbi shouldn't forget, and there should be simple and simplicity in our time. Good night. Good night.